We're back on In Focus, News Radio KMAN here at 920. I'm Brandon Peoples talking with Dr. Neela Boyer, Clinical Associate Professor from the K-State College of Veterinary Medicine. We've been talking here about cat house soiling and some of the reasons why that happens. And the number one symptom I think is kind of fascinating. This would be a good segue here is separation anxiety in cats.
Yeah, so it actually, we get clients all the time that bring in their cats and they say, it's usually my cat just doesn't like me anymore. He's peeing on my bed or she's peeing on my bed. And I have to remind them that it's generally not that at all. It's that they really feel very attached to you and they miss you when you're gone. So a lot of times we get people that go on a business trip or a vacation and they come home to a cat that's peed in an inappropriate location. And often it's on a bed or a blanket. So yeah, separation anxiety is really a common underlying factor in cats, but it's certainly not as easily recognized as in dogs. So we are getting a lot of questions about separation anxiety in dogs right now, and we're treating a fair number of them as folks go back to work or school, especially those who've been at home for a long time with the pandemic. And those pets have been used to a way of life that's very different from what it was previously.
Yeah, separation anxiety is a tricky thing. I have a dog. We've had him for about 5 years. And we took a weekend trip this weekend to go to a wedding, and he comes with us. But as we're packing our suitcase, he starts whimpering. He thinks he's going to get left behind. It's really sad.
It is very sad. And we see a lot of dogs, cats too, that won't eat when their family members are away. They'll wait to eat or even drink until they come home. Some of them will just be they'll sit and watch as their people are gone or their person is gone. So it absolutely is a quality of life issue for those animals. And it's a mental health problem that they struggle with. And so we really have to make sure that clients understand they are not trying to spite you when they're doing this. I have a couple that I'm treating that even they go to bite their owners when they walk out the door, biting at their pant legs, biting at their shoelaces, because they get so stressed about being alone. So it is so important to bring up, and vocalization, as you mentioned, is really in dogs is the number one indicator, is a dog that vocalizes. And a lot of them will sit and bark and whine and howl the whole time their person is gone, or intermittently, which can lead to a lot of complaints if you live in an apartment and potential eviction. So it is so important to bring those problems to our attention so we can help you.
And that's particularly good to note here with school starting back up and routines maybe shifting a little bit in the family households. Right. What are some tips you would suggest here if a dog or cat has to be left alone for a few hours a day?
Right. So I think the first thing is, if you've been home for consistently with them, is we want to talk about how we can start doing some planned graduated departures or some short departures. And I use a lot of video and audio surveillance. So we have most people now have access to a phone or a computer where they can put some form of recording on to watch what that animal is doing and watch it later, or even a live feed where they can see what they're doing. And we really talk about how we can take those little steps to make short trips and watch the animals, see how they're doing with them, and then graduate to longer departures. We talk a lot about independence training in dogs, and that is such an important thing, is to begin to think about how we can train them to physically separate. The term I often use is Velcro dogs, where the client, some of these guys will just follow their owners around when they're at home. They don't let them get out of their sight. And for some of those dogs, that can escalate, where when they are out of their sight and out of their home, it can lead to not only vocalization, but destruction or self-injury as well.
Hmm. All right. Looks like we're getting a phone call potentially here. Looking over there. Yes, we do. We have a caller here, so let's go to the phone lines. Good morning. You're on In Focus.
Yes, with the dog distemper running wild across the country, and they're testing us for all the different vaccines, all the different viruses. Are you testing any of the cats for the C-19? I noticed people are saying that they're holed up in their house and they're still getting C-19. Could they be getting it from the cats? Thank you.
I want to make sure I understand. I heard, so they're held up in their house and the cats are getting...
I think his question is if you're testing for COVID-19.
COVID-19. Yeah. Uh-huh. So with the, we don't have any, at least to my knowledge, we don't have any evidence where the disease has spread from a dog or a cat to a human. But there are those concerns about humans transmitting illness to animals. So, and that's the big concern is we certainly would say that if the human is sick with COVID, we want to make sure that we're not snuggling up to our animals during that time so that we don't run the risk of causing illness in those animals as well. And we don't consider the animals right now when they're coming into the clinic to be of great concern to us because we don't think that the hair is going to be a good transmitter of that type of infection. Whereas if we do have an active respiratory kind of case in a in an animal, then there would be some concerns if they had COVID-19 active in their home. So yes, testing can certainly be done if that is a concern.
I think I read a story over the weekend that the Kansas City Zoo was vaccinating some of its animals against COVID-19, and that was a little surprising to me.
Yeah, there has been a vaccine being administered in some of the large animal, exotic animals in zoos. So at this time, I think there's various organizations testing them in dogs and or cats. But at this time, I mean, the good news is we don't have any evidence to support them to transfer illness back to humans. So the cases that have been reported have been relatively mild or non-existent.
All right. Well, getting back to the separation anxiety topic, I mean, it's good to know that, you know, if your animal is struggling, there are ways to get around that. Good thing with dogs, especially, they're very trainable.
Absolutely. And it is really a matter of, these are dogs that especially, some of them will start house soiling as well. And these are dogs that previously were perfectly well potty trained. So again, it's an emotional distress for them. It's a mental health concern. And they're not trying to upset their family members, but rather this is what happens when they are that stressed. This is something that we can 100% help them with and do things about. Sometimes it may be behavioral modification and helping to that animal to be taught to be left alone with confidence. Other times they may be so anxious we may need medication or anti-anxiety drugs to help them either for a short time or even long term. Some are so severely affected. So the good news is we do have a couple of drugs that are FDA approved for that in dogs.
Okay, very good. Well, that's a very important topic here, especially this time of year. And, you know, we're heating back up again this year. We're in the heat advisory for the next couple of days. Probably a good PSA to just remind people to be careful with their dogs and cats here in the heat.
Absolutely. Making sure that they've got shade and plenty of cold water and keeping them indoors when we can. This is a time of year we also see a lot of people start thinking about as the weather gets cold at night, they don't need to continue their products for fleas and ticks. And in fact, they do. This is actually, as we get into especially later fall, this is when we see a lot of fleas hitch a ride on the animals into the home, and then they live in the home over the winter time. So we always recommend continuing those kinds of products and really do be careful with the dogs, especially that they're taking on walks, because that concrete is so hot in the late afternoon. So thinking about morning when it's less humid outside, especially if it's a dog with black hair, again, it absorbs that heat so well. And some breeds of dogs, I think about the Labradors that just go, 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 and they don't seem to, they really just want to please their owners and play hard, and they will come in with heat stroke and such serious signs from this kind of temperature. So yeah, be careful out there.
All right. Well, yeah. And just remember, if it's too hot for you to be walking barefoot on the asphalt, it's probably not a good condition for your pets either.
Yes, absolutely.
All right. Well, Dr. Boyer, is there anything else you want to cover here this morning while we got you here?
No, we covered a lot of stuff. That's great. I think it's just a matter of, you know, when you have one of those behavioral concerns, a lot of times people don't realize there are behavior specialists in veterinary medicine, so people that specifically deal with that problem. We don't have any in the state of Kansas that are specialists, so we do see a lot of behavioral cases, and we're happy to help you or refer to one of those specialists if we need to, if it's an extreme case. But please bring those concerns up to your veterinarian so that they can help you to target a plan for your dog or cat.
All right. Good information here this morning from Dr. Neela Boyer, again, Clinical Associate Professor in the K-State College of Veterinary Medicine. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you.
That's going to wrap up our first half of the program here. Stay tuned. We'll hear from the Manhattan Regional Airport and Jesse Romo up next.